Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube.
Shots, 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 more shots, but no goals? Will this trend continue in Calgary? Good evening and welcome to Flames Unfiltered. Episode number 102, October 20th, a Wednesday night, live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all those. Time to talk a little bit of Calgary Flames hockey, and the wait is over. The season is underway, and bring on another opening night loss. Yeah. 12 in a row, one behind the all-time professional franchise record held by the Cleveland Browns from 2005 to 17 and the Memphis Grizzlies from 2001 to 2013. Not a record that we want to hold, and sure as hell not a record that we want to break. Did you know that last time Calgary won an opener, Jerome McGinley was the captain. Mark Giordano's cap hit was $891,667. Brent Sutter and Jay Bouwmeester were debuting. Daryl Sutter was the GM. Yeah, all that thanks to a tweet from Pat Steinberg. When I read that tweet, I thought, seriously, it's been that long since we've won an opener? Ugh. Not good. Not good at all. On a positive note, fans are in the building. Fun to see a Saddle Dome rocking. Good to just have hockey back and seeing fans there on a nightly basis. It's sure makes the sport a whole hell of a lot more fun, doesn't it? My excitement level was pretty high on Saturday night. It really was. And I was worried playing the Oilers, and I don't want to be let down playing, you know, a Battle of Alberta right away and a loss right away. And that was a little nerve-wracking, but all in all, a loss for the team, but not a night where I thought that we didn't show up. I guess that would be the best way to put it. I wasn't overly impressed with our performance, but never did I think that we were, I don't know, a laughing stock or anything like that. So, all in all, not horrendous, but definitely we need a win. We need a win. Jam-packed show today. Good to be live again. Hopefully we get some fan interaction. Fire your comments up into the comments screen. I will try to answer as many questions I can during the show as I can. And I love it when I have fan interaction. It makes the whole thing a whole hell of a lot more fun. So if you're taking part of the live, fire in a question. If you're listening to this while you're driving a couple days from now or tomorrow or whenever, you can always fire us questions. Check us out at flamesunfiltered.com, and you can get a hold of us on that or tweet us at flameunfiltered. Big show on this episode. We're going to recap that road opener in Edmonton, and we'll talk about the home opener against the Ducks on Monday night. Then we'll discuss the decision on who's captain of this team or no captain. We'll go back and forth on what should be done there. And then a special guest joins the show, Nate Thomas from the Hockey Podcast Network. He takes care of the Quack Report, the Anaheim Ducks podcast on the show. He's in to talk a little bit of Anaheim Ducks, the matchup with the Flames, and he's quite the Flames guy too. So we're going to talk a little bit of Flames hockey with our good friend Nate Thomas, and then we'll wrap the show with some Flames news from the Pacific, and an interesting listener question that is one that I've been thinking about for a couple weeks, and finally somebody asked me. So thanks for joining in to another edition of Flames Unfiltered. All right, Flames fans, let's recap quickly. We don't always spend a ton of time on the recaps just because, They're not as exciting because you know what? You're all Flames fans. You watch the damn game. You don't need to hear over and over what happened. I'll give you my 2 cents on what I thought from each night. Game one in Edmonton, 5-2 loss to the Oilers. Goal scorers for the Flames, Mangiapane and Lindholm. It was 3-0. Calgary scored to make it 3-1. We made it 3-2. Things got interesting. Yeah. And just a few seconds later, Jesse Puljujärvi scores on a pass from Leon Draisaitl, and the hopes of salvaging some points on opening night went by the wayside with that goal. Shots on goal heavily favored the Flames. 47-27, and you know what? Or excuse me, 47-33. I don't know that we can say that in an Oilers-Flames matchup in quite some time. I really don't think that we outshot them at all last year. I'd have to double-check to be sure. Another thing that I did like that night, did not like it Monday night, giveaways 8-10 in favor of the Flames. We cannot give the puck away this year if we are going to be successful. Flames 1-for-4 on the power play. Yep, the death of us that night. 2-for-4 on the power play for the Oilers. McDavid with the hat trick. That guy is on fire when he plays this team, and it drives me absolutely crazy every time we play them because it seems like McDavid is unreal. Well, we put that one in the rearview mirror, and Anaheim came to town on Monday night. And a game that was a little wonky. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but a little wonky. First period I thought was sloppy on both ends. I thought the Flames really looked good in the second period and pretty much controlled the play. And then the third period started, and the first half I thought the Flames were really, really good. And as I was watching, I just kept thinking, you know, is something bad here going to happen? Because it just had the makings of an oh-no moment. And it worried me. I watched, and I was just like, we're controlling this game. Is this going to – can this slip out of our hands? Is this for real that this is going to maybe happen? Goal scorers for the Flames on Monday night. Blake Coleman scored the 7:43 mark, his first of the year on a breakaway and a great pass from Johnny Gaudreau. Second period, Flames' Elias Lindholm scored on a nice shot from the top of the circle, his second of the year. And then the killer at the 12:55 mark, Rickard Rakell scores on one that I thought Markstrom maybe should have had. And then Jamie Draisaitl scores in overtime at the 3:26 mark to give the Ducks the win. Positives from the game, Flames again. 43 shots to the Ducks, 27. I thought we controlled play. Here is a bad thing, though. We had 19 giveaways on Monday night. Whew, that is a lot more than we had Saturday night. Not good. The Ducks only had 12. And, things didn't go the Flames' way. We did salvage 1 point, and we got the loser point out of the deal. Flames back at it on Thursday night in Detroit. 2 points on the line and a critical 2 points early in the season. All right, Flames fans. This week the Flames announced not a captain, no. They announced a leadership group. What were your guys' thoughts? I'll tell you mine. It didn't upset me that they didn't name a captain. Actually, I was happy they didn't name a captain because I don't think this team's ready for a captain. So what they're going to do this year is we're going to have 4 A's and they're going to rotate, between 4 guys, Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund, Matthew Tkachuk, and Chris Tanev. All 4, I think, worthy of it. Tanev to me seems like the leader. I don't know. I don't know why I feel like this team, to be successful this year, is going to have to take a mold from Tanev. I just do. I just feel like that's going to be the key. Now, the Flames haven't had to name a captain in quite some time. Giordano was our captain for 8 years. He won a Messier Award. And before that, Iginla was a captain for 9 years. So it's been since 2003-04 season, which some people that are Flames fans weren't even alive at the time. It's only been Iginla and Giordano. Before that, we had Bob Bugner for 2, Craig Conroy for 2, Dave Lowry for 2, Steve Smith for 2, Todd Simpson for 2, Theo Fleury for 2, and Joe Nieuwendyk for 4. I don't necessarily like when it's 2-2-2-2. Those were years, if you look at those years, they were not good years in Calgary. It seems like when Neuendijk left, we had no stability until Jerome McGinley was here. We can't afford to go through a stretch like that again. When will the Flames name a captain? I don't think we'll see one this year, and I think that's a good decision. Right now, let's see how this season goes. Let's see who steps up. Let's see how it falls into place, and we'll be able to name a captain, hopefully, that'll be captain for a long time to come. What are we looking for in a captain? When I think of a captain in hockey, I look for five things. I look for who has the respect of the team, management, and somewhat the fans. I look for a player that leads by example, on and off the ice, stands above the rest of the team and leads by example. I look for commitment. Players who don't give up on the puck, don't give up on plays, don't give up on situations, and sure as hell don't give up on games. I look for responsibility. I look for guys that take ownership and responsibility in their own play and aren't afraid to discuss and talk about their teammates' play with them. And I want, most of all, players that bring the best out in their teammates. I think that is so critical because really, that's what it's all about in being a captain, is having the people around you rise up. We've heard the press talk this week, or we've heard the players talk in the media this week that there's a lot of guys that are captains in this room, or mini captains, they called them, or whatnot, and you know, all said that this will be a year where we're going to be able to learn and see who steps up into that place. My vote right now would be Chris Tanev, but I want to see where this goes. I want to see if this team morphs into Matthew Tkachuk's team. I want to see, really, there's so many unanswered questions in Calgary this year. It'll be interesting to see. Corey Fry writes in, Lindholm for captain. You know, I thought about that. And he was definitely one of the guys on my list that I thought, this is a guy that is leading the way. And I'm not a guy that picks based off popularity with his teammates. I base it off respect, and I sure as hell don't base it off points. I think teams that do that that's stupid. Your best player doesn't need to be your captain. Your leader should be your captain. And I agree. I think Lindholm would be a possible choice for that, and somebody that maybe should be considered. And probably not somebody that Daryl Sutter's ruling out. We're going to shift gears in the show now, and it's time for an interview with Nate Thomas from the Quack Report. Great talking with another fellow Flames guy. Joining Flames Unfiltered now, Nate Thomas. You can hear him on the Hockey Podcast Network, heading up the Quack Report covering the Anaheim Ducks. And Nate is also a longtime Calgary Flames fan. He's been on the show before. Welcome back, Nate.
Thanks again for having me. I always wonder if, you know, the last one is the last one kind of thing, because you never know. There might just be one day that you just don't like me, right?
No, we don't always agree though, do we?
Oh, not always, but it's good debate that we have for sure. Yeah. There's definitely no hard feelings by the end of it or anything like that, but it's just good debate.
Yeah, that's what it's about though. That's what sports is about. You want to be able to, you know, have friends that you don't maybe have the same opinions, but you know, you're cheering for the same team, but you banter back and forth on different ideas and stuff. I guess that's how you learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk Ducks Flames last night. Anaheim wins 3-2 in overtime, and you're a Flames fan. You do cover the Ducks, so you're super knowledgeable on both teams. Tell me if I saw this wrong, but I watched a game that I thought the first period was fairly sloppy. I thought the second period Calgary controlled for the most part, and I thought the first part of the third period, I kept telling myself, we should be up by two. We should be up by three. And they just kept hanging around. And I'm like, at the 10-minute mark, I was like, I don't like I have a bad gut feeling. And sure enough, I believe it was around the 7-minute mark, Anaheim scores. And yeah, and just kind of went from there. And Anaheim picks up 2 points and Calgary gets the one loser point, which at the end, I thought, why do I feel like that point is going to be so critical? I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, as a Flames fan, I was kind of wondering that too. And I don't think you were wrong in your thoughts whatsoever during those periods. As a Flames fan, you know, I was definitely thinking as well, just the pressure and, you know, the puck control that, you know, Daryl Sutter wants from this team and everything like that. Just, you're right. I felt like they should have been up by two as well in that second period. And, but, you know, I think looking on the Anaheim side, this year we're very grateful to have not one, but two great goaltenders, I will say, in John Gibson and Anthony Stolarz. Gibson being a net, of course, against Calgary there. And Gibson normally does well at the start of the season. Those are the games that you probably don't want to be playing the Anaheim Ducks, unfortunately, but you know, it is a bit of a question later on if they continue to play him heavily. That's when he starts to, you know, he gets a little bit tired and it starts to fall off a little bit. So my hope, at least from a Ducks side, is that, you know, they'll give Stolarz a few more games this year and cut Gibson back a little bit more. Because Stolarz is a capable goaltender as well. Sure. I was, you know, just watching the Anaheim, and Edmonton game, and Stolarz is hanging in with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right? So,
awesome.
And, you know, and stopping 41 shots on, or yeah, 41 shots on 43, against the Minnesota Wild there, which was, you know, a last second game basically as well. The Wild taking the lead 2-1 in that with 7 seconds left in the game, so.
Goaltending is so important, you know, and I've looked at this Ducks roster and over the last couple of years, and I thought, you know, the talent is coming, but I've always thought, you know, geez, when that talent gets here and you got I consider a top five goalie in the league in Gibson, that's really, really a bright spot. And this team, you know, we were talking a little bit before we went on air about this team has a bright future ahead. You know, I watched some of these guys, you know, you mentioned Zegras, and there is just some talent on this team. It's exciting to watch. This is a team that honestly the last couple of years I haven't watched a lot because it really wasn't relevant and a lot of excitement there. This is a team that they're kind of like, to me, I'm looking at Florida as one of these teams this year. It's like, oh, when they're on, I'm watching because it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're not the first person that I've heard that from this season, actually, that's not in the Anaheim market, right? Like, people are getting interested in the Anaheim Ducks again because of that young talent that's there. You mentioned Trevor Zegras. There's Jamie Drysdale on the back end.
Beautiful goal.
Third overall. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's the third overall pick from this season, Mason McTavish, who's at least getting his 9 games. We'll see how he does here, but it's looking good. Unfortunately, he did get put on IR today, just before the game that was announced, unfortunately. So hopefully, you know, he gets better soon and can come back and continue to show off what he did. He had a great debut there with 2 points in the season opener for Anaheim. But yeah, there's a lot of young guys that are really promising, and you can see the potential in them, and just even how this team is constructed right now. Give them a couple more years of experience and time together, and this can be a dangerous team, which is, you know, great for me on the Anaheim broadcast side, but not so much maybe on the Flames fan side, where, you know, you're going to have to deal with that in your division. So.
Oh, and you know, I'm not trying to, you know how much I love the Flames, but I look at the prospect pool of Anaheim coming up, you know, Anaheim hasn't been bad for that many years to develop that much good talent. So when they had the opportunities to get a few picks over the last few years, they've made them count with talent that I think is going to pay off for years to come. I look at our prospect pool in Calgary and I'm like, man, like, I know we haven't had a lot of high draft picks, but we need to pick up the pace as far as our prospect pools. As far as I'm concerned, I love watching this talent in Anaheim, and yeah, they're going to be a thorn in Calgary's side, just like, you know, they were 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when Anaheim just, I mean, we've talked about the losing streak in Anaheim for the Flames, and I don't know if we'll ever get past that where we don't think about that going into Anaheim.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a few years unless, you know, Calgary's able to pick up a few more wins, say even this season, right? I believe Anaheim and Calgary play four times this year, so there's still three more to come. I believe it's two in December and one more in April.
That's good. You know, there was an incident during last night's game that I thought was very interesting. Have you ever seen that happen where, like, Matthew Tkachuk reaches up to block?
No, I've never seen that before.
Leaving, but you could just see the look on it. Some of the Anaheim players on the ice were like, something's got to get called here. And then, I did chuckle when I found out that it was actually an interference call on Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah, I was.
Game. And I'm just like, well, I thought maybe like, and I've never seen it happen, so I didn't even know what the ruling was. I thought maybe Backlund would go to the box for 2 minutes and Tkachuk would get like a 10-minute misconduct.
Yeah, it's definitely not something you normally see, right? Like somebody trying to make sure that it doesn't go over the glass, but from the bench. So yeah, I believe it was deemed as, you know, bench interference. The reason being, you know, the puck would have gone over the glass, which would have been a delay of game penalty. So there's a penalty being called really no matter what. But I was kind of laughing about that because, yeah, nobody really knew
what
the reason was or anything like that. And even my co-host, Carter on the Quack Report there, who was originally an Oilers fan, he was even defending.
How does that work? You got an Oilers and Flames fan running the Quack Report, and you guys do a hell of a job. I listen to your guys' podcast, and yeah, definitely go on to the Hockey Podcast Network. Check out that show because they do a great job.
Yeah, thank you very much. But yeah, like even you know we were texting during the game last night, and he was even defending Tkachuk. He's like, I can't believe I'm doing this, but how is that a penalty to Calgary? So, and like, just, you know, having some officiating experience, I'm trying to piece together why it would be as well and that sort of thing. But like, even like at points, even I was like, but that doesn't make sense. That lines up though. And that doesn't. And yeah, it was definitely a weird thing. And you know, like I said, you don't really see it, like that kind of a play too often. So
let's switch gears and let me get your take on the Flames. You're kind of my go-to guy when I need a good Flames argument. You and Audie are my guys that I go to, but,
well, it's no wonder why Audie and I are friends.
Yeah, exactly. Always good banter back and forth though. And I love having you guys on the show. Does this team make the playoffs? We're going to get right to the guts of this right away. First question.
I think they do. It's more a matter of where in the standings. But I guess at the same time, as long as you make it, anything can happen. Yeah. You know, you just mentioned Audie, so I just kind of remembered this as well. You know, Audie's show, the Barn Burner podcast. I believe they had Calgary, you know, third kind of wild card spot. On the Quack Report with our season predictions, I went as far as saying Calgary could be in second.
Wow, I had a fourth.
Yeah, and I was trying not to be biased as well, but I was kind of just taking a look at the rest of the division and that sort of thing. Wasn't really sure, you know, where Seattle would end up.
Yeah.
Kind of that being the massive wild card of this division, right? The brand new team that nobody has any idea about. On paper, I think the goaltending and the defense looks good, but the forward core was kind of the question mark because it's, you know, it's good, but can it be enough kind of thing to, you know, have enough goals to continually put up wins.
This division though is kind of a scramble. Like I do feel Calgary takes second, but I also, if they finish sixth, I'm not going to be shocked.
Yeah. Carter and I each had, Edmonton and Calgary, you know, in second and third place, just kind of flipped around or that. And, I said for myself, you know, Calgary or Edmonton could take that second spot. It just kind of depended on certain things for them, right? For the Calgary Flames, mm-hmm. you know, if they can actually, you know, play some hockey, because you know everybody was expecting them to, you know, at least be second for the North Division last season, and that didn't really turn out.
No, so
it's but you know, I think it was kind of the same thing that I gave for the season before predictions as well, with Edmonton and Calgary. Those feel like the next best options after Vegas, of course. You might as well just give them the division title, and but you know, with Edmonton, it was, you know, if Koskinen and Smith can hold up, and that defense is lacking, I would say, in the actual defensive aspect. They're going to be very much like the Toronto Maple Leafs from a couple seasons ago, where they're going to be trying to win games 7-6. And, you know, as I had just last seen with the Ducks and Oilers game going on, it's 4-3 Anaheim. It's high-scoring game, right? Or relatively so.
Well, you just don't know what's going to happen. The Sabres beat the Canucks 5-2 tonight.
The Sabres are 3-0.
You know, you look at it, and, you know, I know we're only three games in, so, like, things will come back to reality. Yeah. Teams will find their ways. But, like, do you think it's a lock that Vegas wins this division?
If everything goes according to plan, or at least relatively. I mean, there's already a bit of a hiccup with Max Pacioretty being out, right? That's a key player for them, but.
I picked them to win the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, I think they're that good, but I don't know. I'm starting to wonder a little bit, like, is Robin Lehner going to be good if he doesn't have Fleury? You know how sometimes things happen that way. And I'm starting to question maybe that there might be more. This division might be more open than we think.
Yeah, you mentioned Leonard specifically, and he is a guy who loves a challenge, and he majority of the time rises up to that challenge and can show it. I wouldn't put the question mark so much on him and his play rather than I would the team in front of him, and you know, if they continue to get banged up and that sort of thing. Because with Vegas specifically, you know, it's surprisingly not very deep in, like, down the middle. They have great stock on the wings and their defense is good, but down the middle is hurting, and it kind of, you know, I think makes them wonder, should they have kept Nick Suzuki, who is, you know, eliminated them from the playoffs last year with Montreal.
It's interesting to see. And you got the speedsters in Edmonton with the weak defense, and you got Vancouver where, you know, are they going to bounce back after like a COVID bad year? There's just a lot of unanswered questions. And, you know, we touched on Anaheim, and I personally think that this is a team that's going to surprise a lot of people this year. I think Anaheim is a team with tons and tons of young talent that's really fun to watch. And I picked them to finish fifth, and I don't even feel like I'm being ballsy in that prediction. And I know a lot of people kind of laughed at me when I made that prediction, but this is an exciting hockey team.
I mean, if they continue the play that they have been for the start of the season, which, like you said, you know, things might eventually kind of come back to normal. I don't think you'd be too far off actually with that prediction. And you know, it was trying to, I think over at TQR as well, we were trying to temper expectations and that sort of thing. And just knowing how, like I said, there was, you know, roster mismanagement last year and whatnot that did cost us at times. And so we were trying to think of it that way, I think, where we both placed Anaheim finishing seventh in the division. But also just the fact that, you know, some teams just have had longer together, right? Like you said, this is a very young team, but then again, young teams can definitely make a splash, right? I believe it was the 2015-16 Toronto Maple Leafs were the young team of Matthews, Marner that weren't really expected to go to the playoffs. And even though they lost to Washington, I believe it was,
they were there,
nobody was really disappointed because nobody expected them to be there.
Where do you look at Calgary's goaltending situation? And we touched on Anaheim and how secure Anaheim should feel about their goaltenders. And we kind of touched a little bit on Edmonton's goaltending and Vegas's goaltending. Where do you see Calgary's goaltending?
I do really like Calgary's goaltending. You know my feelings on Jacob Markstrom. I'm happy to have him here in Calgary. And, you know, Dan Vladar was a question mark for me going into this season. Just because, and it's not even on his skill or that, he just has such a small sample size in the NHL. So it's nothing really that he could control, really, that was kind of the, like, raising the question marks. I was able to go to a couple preseason games, though, where he was playing, and, you know, I sat seven rows behind his net. This guy is good. Like, it's very promising, honestly. And I, just because of, I mean, you never know. We could have a different GM by then, but I feel like we'll have to move on from Vladar after his contract goes up. because he could warrant a little bit more money than we probably want to give him, honestly, if he were to continue the way that I've been seeing him play. This is a good young goaltender and a guy who can definitely, if, you know, knock on wood, something happens to Jacob Markstrom, I feel could take over the net for a while.
You know, I was hesitant like you heading into the season. I calmed my nerves very quickly after watching him in the preseason. I was very, very impressed. And then I also thought back to, hey, Mika Kiprusoff was a third string goalie in San Jose.
Yeah, behind Toscala and Nabokov. that's such a you know, bad problem to have back in 2004, right?
So, I mean, like, a lot of famous fans are like, well, this guy's unproven, and why are we bringing him? Well, we're bringing him in because we've scouted him, just like we scouted Mika Kiprusoff, who ended up being the best goalie in Calgary Flames history. Like, I'm not saying that Vladar is going to step in and be the best goalie in our history, but after his seeing him and his mechanics, I feel comfortable.
Yeah, I definitely feel more comfortable in him than some of the other guys that we've brought in the last few years, that's for sure.
What's your thoughts on Markstrom early on in this season?
I think he's been playing fine. It is just, you know, our defense has been a little spotty at times, especially with not really trying to call out anybody, but new addition Nikita Zadorov hasn't been great. I know we only gave up a third round pick for him, but a third round pick, you never really know with the draft, right? Like, I Steve Dangle calls the draft picks just magic beans. You don't know what you're going to get with them. You could pull out, let's say, Henrik Lundqvist in the seventh round of the draft, right? Or you could have Nail Yakupov with the first overall pick. You never really know exactly what you're going to get. But it just kind of the placement of it, what I've kind of seen from the first little bit, I'm not sure if it was worth it even for 1 year.
I can't defend his play. I mean, it hasn't been good. But I do, deep in my gut, feel that if this team makes the playoffs, what he's going to bring to the table physically down the stretch is going to be well worth it.
I'm really hoping so, especially.
I'll be the first to admit it. I will, because I have defended him, and now I mean, I can't defend some of his mistakes. I mean, he's making mistakes.
Yeah.
But I can't help but think that big body isn't going to pay in the long run for us. Now, he's got to get better and we have to see some improvement, or otherwise I can't defend him any longer. Mm-hmm. But going back to Markstrom, I wanted Markstrom. I was elated when we got him. I can't say though that I've been completely satisfied. I think he's been fine to start the season. I think he's been okay, but he needed to make a key save last night. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do that. And I'm not blaming him for anything last night, but I'm just saying, like, there's gotta be, I mean, thinking back to last year, like, as much as I love Markstrom, did he steal any games for us last year?
I think he did. In my opinion, sure, there were definitely games early on, I would say, that he definitely did. But, you know, last year, his kind of fall after, I don't really blame him for that, actually, just because he was injured and it sounded like he he got pushed to play through it a little bit. And, you know, kind of this is me just kind of speculating at this point. It doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility, though, considering that Sean Monahan played with, you know, a bad hip starting from game 10 of last year. And we're still playing him during games that we didn't have to play. Like, we're trying to go for the playoffs anymore.
Yeah. I see your point, but I also, we're paying these guys money to play too.
Yeah. But at the same time, though, the money's not worth it if they aren't playing to at least 90%, right? Yeah. So.
But I also, from what I've heard with Markstrom, is that he's not coming out because of an injury on his own doing, because he is one of the most fierce competitors there is out there. And I got a feeling that he was pulling the, no, I'm okay.
Oh, I totally get that mind frame as well. You know that I'm a goalie, and I definitely pulled that one or two times in my short career. So
your thoughts on Johnny Gaudreau? I mean, we're only two games in, so like, I'm not expecting I mean, I am not writing anybody off on this team, positive or negative, because we're two games in. But your early thoughts on Gaudreau?
He's looking good. I mean, he's technically on an 82 game or an 82 point pace right now, 2 points in two games. But, you know, even that first game against Edmonton, it's, you know, it seemed like people were already starting to bash on him. Oh, he didn't pick up any points or that kind of thing. And, but, you know, the advanced analytics were showing that he was doing really well, actually. It was just, you know, like the majority of this team, like we saw against Anaheim, like we saw against Edmonton, there's just no finish on it, unfortunately.
I think Johnny Gaudreau has been a pleasant surprise this year. Mm-hmm. And I think Johnny Gaudreau was fairly good last year. And I'm probably his biggest critic. And the reason I'm his critic, and I went through this about 50 times on the show. I think he's capable of being a star. I just think he avoids situations that, okay, let's put it this way. He's really, really good on the power play because you don't get hit on the power play.
Okay, I can see that. At the same time, though, you...
But he's been good this year.
It is a habit to get out of, but, you know, when you're constantly getting hacked in the wrists and that kind of stuff, and...
Every player gets hacked in the wrist.
Very true. I have to agree with Connor McDavid to an extent, though. The star players need to be watched maybe a little bit more. Just a little bit more. That 1 or 2% more, I think. So, because, I mean, like, look what happened to Gaudreau a couple seasons ago, right? It was a broken wrist or something like that, or he had some issue though, but that was.
Monahan's got broken the year before too.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they need to cut it down on that league wide. I don't care who it is, here's the part that scares me about Gaudreau. Now, if they re-sign Gaudreau, I'm not necessarily going to be upset. Mm-hmm. But what I'm looking at, and I'm looking at comparables and what he's going to expect to be paid, I don't know how we afford to pay that.
What's the number that you're thinking of?
Well, I'm thinking that to stay in Calgary, he's going to want 7 years or 6 years, at least 6 to 8 years at, I'm going to say he's going to say 8.25.
This is definitely where we're going to disagree. I don't hate that number. If Gaudreau continues to play, if Gaudreau plays the way we know he can play, mind you, that's also not just on him. We need, you know, guys who can play with him. And I think we've had a bit of a change to that in, you know, he's playing with Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk right now. I love that line.
I do too.
You know, if he were to stay with Sean Monahan, yes, that might be a little bit of an overpayment to a point.
Well, if we pay that, we can't pay, then we gotta let Tkachuk go. We can't pay.
Maybe also don't sign Zadorov and Gabranson to.
You have to have defense money.
Yeah, but you don't.
But then we're going to look in the back end and be like, well, we don't have anybody back there. I mean,
you don't have to sign seventh defenseman though to $3.75 million contracts. Or guys that should be in the AHL to $2 million.
I don't disagree with that. I just look at, I heard a thing on, I can't remember what podcast it was, but they were talking about how there's players out there that'll get you to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And there's players out there that'll win you the cup.
Okay.
Johnny Gaudreau gets you to the playoffs. Mm. Johnny Gaudreau doesn't win you a Stanley Cup.
In the past,
Mark Stone wins you a playoffs.
Okay.
It wins you a Stanley Cup. I'm just using him as an example.
Yeah. I definitely see your point. Like I'm not throwing it out the window by any means.
So like I'm not against re-signing Johnny Gaudreau, but when you stroke a check for over $8 million, I think, I don't know, I'm a Flames fan since 1980 and I have only seen one Stanley Cup and I know only one team can win it each year. I'm not so happy with just making the playoffs anymore. I kind of want to have a Stanley Cup.
Oh yeah, I'm not happy with it either. The closest I got was in 2004, right? Like otherwise, like actually seeing the cup being won was on a VHS tape that my aunt had as we built a Stanley Cup out of tin foil and margarine containers and an old bowl she had. So, but I feel a little bit more confident in. I feel a bit more confident in the abilities of Johnny Gaudreau with the players he's with now in Lindholm and Tkachuk.
I think so too.
Right? Because I think all three of those guys elevate each other a little bit more.
Do you think he wants to be in Calgary?
I think he does. I honestly do believe that. I know there are definitely players that will say that they want to stay and and then move on without really a second or third thought, but I do genuinely believe that Johnny Gaudreau wants to stay in Calgary.
Yeah. I can't discount that. I mean, I don't know. I would love for him to just, I would love for it to work out financially and statistically. Yeah. You know, I do. Cause I mean, good players are hard to come by. I've liked what I've seen so far this year. I really have. Oliver Shillington, is he going to get a chance and does he deserve a chance?
He deserves a chance, that's for sure. Does he get a chance? That's kind of the question mark right now. At the moment, it doesn't look like it. I believe that game against Edmonton, we ran 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, and Shillington still only pulled in 3 minutes of ice time. He sat for the rest of the time, which feels ridiculous to me. But
yeah. I love what I've seen from Shillington. He's always one of those guys that, like, he was kind of like a Sam Bennett to me. It's like, I love it. I love it. I want to see more. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think this year, what Shillington brings as far as puck moving and speed is exactly what this team needs.
Watching Shillington in the preseason made me very much question why we needed Erik Gudbranson.
I like Erik Gudbranson so far. He's been good in the regular season.
I'm taking it with a grain of salt so far because you are right. He has. He's played relatively well. Even the analytics will support that. It is only 2 games in. I did see him throughout the preseason, and that was awful.
I know.
It was so bad. Like I talked earlier, just how I had those seats that were 7 rows behind Vladar. I was 7 rows behind watching Erik Gudbranson hold on to the puck for a little bit, go around the right circle, get to the hash marks and pass it straight up the middle, getting picked off by an Oilers player for a goal. Yeah. It was horrendous.
Yeah. And I saw Zadorov throw a pizza up the middle last night too. So yeah. God, these guys scare me.
Yeah, those two are the big question marks for me. And I don't think it's going to be a good answer.
And I think I like what they bring, but I just get scared of what else they bring. I like the upside, but I probably hate the downside more. I think Shillington does get a chance, and Sutter hinted at that in the post game last night. He said Shillington's going to play. We're going to need 8-9 defensemen this year. Shillington is going to be a part of this team, and I for some reason this year, I think Sutter's really thinking it and working with it because he gave him a ton of time in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was write-off, he wouldn't have gotten that chance. I don't
know. Yeah, I do know there's a lot of people who have been very vocal, though, of, you know, if you gave him that much in the preseason, you saw what good he could do. Why is he sitting right now?
Yep.
Or why are you only playing him for 3 minutes when you put him out there essentially to remove a forward, right?
So that being said, do you feel uncomfortable with Valimaki a little bit right now?
Not overly.
No.
Because if I'm correct on this, he has been playing with Gudbranson. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of him.
He's fine though, which scares me.
I feel like Valimaki's trying to pick up a couple pieces for Gudbranson, which, you know, just kind of keeps things unbalanced and is the reason that Valimaki's play maybe isn't where we think it should be.
I didn't think he was trying to play defense for two guys last year, though. I thought he had blunders last year. I thought.
I see the thing is about last year to me. I feel like from everybody to as high as Tampa Bay to as low as Vancouver, last year was such an anomaly that I think it's almost a write-off.
I hope so. I hope so, because it wasn't very positive for us. And,
yeah.
And I have a lot of positive feelings coming into this year. And I made a vow to myself that I'm going to be more patient with some players this year. Last year at this time, I was freaking out about Jeff Ward all the time.
And this same year.
Oh, I know. We were totally on the same page on that one.
That was a good Brad Treliving move to get rid of him. However, he shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Nope. Every night, me and you tweeted each other back and forth because every night was like, what lineup are we going to see tonight? I mean, like,
yeah,
we're going to have Lindholm on the third line tonight. And I mean, I didn't know what to expect from night to night. It was awful.
Yeah, exactly. I saw more consistency in a thing of pudding. Like,
oh, we're two games into the season. We've got one of a possible 4 points. We head out on a road trip. I believe it's six of the next seven games are on the road. How critical is this road trip?
Very. And I think that not even like, you know, normally you would say the more critical games would probably be in the Western Conference. I think it's even going to be more so in the East because the East is a little bit more skill-based, I would say, than the West. The West is still – you still have those meat and potato type guys. The East is extremely fast and extremely skilled. And you're – if I'm remembering off the top of my head, you know, we play teams like the Rangers or the Devils. The Devils especially are another young team that's going to be interesting to watch this year, with a lot of their young guys taking another step forward. So it's definitely going to be interesting to watch for sure.
It's a scary road trip. It's scary, especially when we've only got 1 of 4 points so far. The heat is on Thursday night as they head into Detroit to start this road trip. And I don't mind road trips early in the year. It just seems like a lot of road games to start the year, but hopefully we get through it. Hopefully we can pick up some wins, move up the standings a little bit, and yeah, have some positive year in Calgary this year.
Yeah, I definitely hope so as well.
Well, I appreciate you joining the show. It's always fun talking Flames with you. We go back and forth. We have a good time with it. I know that when we find out if Gaudreau's staying or leaving, you'll be my first person I call. Because that seems to be a topic we always like to discuss. Appreciate you coming on the show. It's always good talking Flames hockey with you, and hopefully I can have you back on real soon.
Thanks, Ahan. Wow. Yeah, it's the end of the night. Hey, thanks again for having me on, Brad.
I appreciate it. Hey, hockey fans, check out the Debate Hockey Podcast. Host Brad Brood and Blake Friars debate all the happenings throughout the hockey world every single week on the Debate Hockey Podcast. All right, back again for a little bit of Flames news. Lots happened, you know, two games, quite a bit of news happened for the Flames. And I'll start off right away with what I thought was going to be a suspension that turned into a $5,000 roughing fine on defenseman Rasmus Anderson on Saturday night when he roughed up Kyler Yamamoto in the corner. And what many thought in the league was a headbutt, I didn't actually disagree. I thought it was kind of a headbutt too, and I expected one or two games. I really, really did. I don't think Rasmus Anderson's a dirty player at all, and I'm not meaning that. I just, to me, it looked like a headbutt, and I know he might have been following through with his punch. Still kind of was a head to the face. So I thought he'd maybe get a suspension there. That didn't happen. You remember Flames fans last year, Yamamoto slew-footed Anderson in front of the net, and he got a two-game suspension for that. Anderson, by this time, maybe got him back a little bit this year. I think he might have got away with not getting suspended, but anyways, a $5,000 fine. He was back in the lineup Monday night. Wednesday, this morning, Glenn Gaudin was placed on waivers. Will he clear? I don't know. I've liked his play as of late, and the reason for it is Brad Richardson's coming off injured reserve, and they need a spot for him on their roster. If Gaudin clears waivers, it's likely that he is sent to Stockton. We'll see what happens with that. I don't know. I think it's a 50-50 deal here. I don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully we don't lose Glenn Godden. Injury report, stolen back from COVID. He's been practicing. Richardson sounds like he's since the Godden put on waivers. Looks like he's coming back from IR on lower body and will be available to play. And Tyler Pitlick talked to the media today, and it sounds like he is all ready to go, and we may see him back in the lineup on Thursday night. Where does the Pacific stand so far? Yes, we're only four games in for a couple teams. Where do we stand? Edmonton currently in first, undefeated, 3-0-0-0. 6 points. Edmonton stands in first. San Jose second, 2-0. Who saw that one coming? Anaheim 2-2 with 4 points in third. In fourth, looks like Vancouver with 3 points in four games. Seattle 3 points in five games. In fifth, Vegas 2 points in, 2 points in two games in sixth. LA has 2 points in three games, and Calgary sitting in the basement as it stands now, 1 point after two games. Hopefully we can change that soon. I'm a big projections guy, and I like to see and think about, like, where does everybody else think our Flames are going to be in it? Do they think they're going to make the playoffs? Where do they think they're going to go? I took a look at The Athletic, which I read every day. I recommend you subscribe. It's great. They have great news every day. They cover the Flames very, very well. Calgary, they've got them projected at 90 points. I had them projected at 92, so we're right in the ballpark there. They have them as a 51% chance of making the playoffs, 51% chance of missing the playoffs, 2% chance of making the playoffs, 9% chance of making the conference final. Whew, sorry. The Pacific, they've got Calgary 49% chance of making it. That doesn't make sense. That contradicts. Whatever. Let's take a look at this. They've got Edmonton 94% chance of making the playoffs. Vegas 90%. Seattle 73%. That is super high. Like, wow, that is out of control high. Calgary 49, San Jose 33, Vancouver fans are going to freak when they see this, 28%, LA 21, Anaheim 2. Other notes from the Pacific Division, Evander Kane has been suspended for 21 regular season games. He will not be eligible to play prior to San Jose's game against the New Jersey Devils on November 30th, and the reason for it is the lack of compliance with the NHL/NHLPA COVID-19 protocol. I don't think that his past run-ins and problems helped him out any with this. Evander Kane is trouble, and I'm not sure what happens with him if he plays another game this year, if he's just sat and bought out at the end of the year, if he's put on waivers and put to the minors. I don't know what will happen with Evander Kane, but we'll see where that one all goes. A listener question, and this is a listener question that I've thought about a ton, and finally someone texts me and asked me the question. It came across our fan line from Audrey Scranton, Calgary, Alberta. Who is this season's whipping boy in Calgary? Pretty easy. It's already happened. The media, the fans are already all over Nikita Zadorov. He's had some problems. He's had some issues. He's also brings a physical aspect to the game that we may like down the stretch, but definitely creating some issues. Some runners up that I think could fall into this would be Gabranson. He's going to give him a run for his money. I think those two are going to take the heat off good old Sean Monahan, who's feeling a little bit of heat, but Zadorov, the heat is on big time. Some of the past whipping boys in Calgary, TJ Brody, Sam Bennett. Yeah. We did not treat them fairly, did we, Flames fans?
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
All right, Flames fans. Game previews. Four games lie ahead this week before we talk again next week as the Flames head east on a 5-game road trip so critical early in the season. Sometimes road trips early on are good, but this will be interesting. After losing a game on Monday that should have been 2 points, the Flames head into Detroit on Thursday. Detroit, speaking of which, is a much improved Detroit team. I like what I've seen so far with this Detroit team. Then on Saturday afternoon, freaking morning here in Calgary, the Flames take on the Washington Capitals. Monday night, they are on to Madison Square Garden to take on the New York Rangers, and they back it up with a back-to-back on Tuesday night in New Jersey before they head back west to Alberta. And hopefully they're coming back with, what do you guys want, 5 points? That's what I want on this road trip. I want 5 points. I think that's very, very important. And I think it's very, very doable. I really do. And we'll see what happens there. Hot Mic Watch Party. Yep. They start real soon as that gets going on October 28th. You ask, what the heck is a Hot Mic Watch Party? Well, that is where you join me to talk Flames hockey. What we do is we watch the game together, we talk about the game, we give out some great prizes, we have a lot of fun, we meet other Flames fans, we watch the game together, talk about the good, talk about the bad, wow at the great plays, and have some contests along the way, win some prizes. People get some hockey cards sent out to them, and always fun. Watch for further details next week on that. Join in on the fun. That's October 28th. That gets going. That is the Hot Mic Watch Party from Flames Unfiltered. Join me to watch a Calgary Flames game together. We're going to be doing it 10 times this year in Calgary. Well, yep, another episode in the books. Flames fans, thanks for tuning in. Tell all your friends these are live on Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock. Thanks to my guest, Nate Thompson, Thomas, for joining the show this week. Check him out on the Hockey Podcast Network. He covers the Anaheim Ducks podcast called The Quack Report. Very, very good. Big road trip starts this Thursday. Next week we'll talk all about this road trip, and we'll have a much clearer image of just what the Flames look like this year. Thanks to all our listeners. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Help us out. Get on over and follow us on social media at Flames Unfiltered. Subscribe on YouTube at Inside Edge Hockey Media Group. Rate, review us at Apple Podcast. Thanks so much for joining the show tonight. Thanks for all the listener questions. Thanks for following us every week. Well, big road trip. I'm nervous. I'm excited. See you next week, Flames fans.
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk.
This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.